From the podcast that brought you to each of the last lesbian bars in the country and back in time through the sapphic history that shaped them, comes a brand new season of Cruising Beyond the Bars. This is your host, Sarah Gabrielli, and I've spent the past year interviewing history-making lesbians and queer folks about all kinds of queer spaces, from bookstores to farms to line dancing and much more.
For 11 years, every night women slept illegally on the common.
We would move down to the West Indies to form a lesbian nation.
Meg Kristen coined the phrase women's music, but she would have liked to say it was lesbian music.
And that's kind of the origins of the Combahoover Collective.
You can listen to Cruising on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes air every other Tuesday starting February 4th.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
And that's why it's important what you're doing and what you've been doing. I mean, anytime, it seems like anytime you were faced with any kind of adversity or any otherness, let's say, you created something out of it that like educated the masses. And so you're just such a change maker and it's amazing. And we need more folks like you in the world who maybe sleep around a lot. And I'm just kidding.
And go naked at on age 70 on stages, major stages.
Naked. Hello there. Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, the show that aims to uplift, highlight, normalize, and celebrate LGBTQIA plus families in all our beautiful forms. My name is Jamie and I'm your host. And ooh, we have a great episode for you today with my special guest, Peggy Gillespie, who has basically spent her whole life educating and doing her best to oust ignorance when it comes to gender, sexuality, race. And it's a good episode. And Peggy is a hippie from the 60s and 70s. And that's all I have to say about that. It's a great story. It's a great story. And before I roll the tape, I do want to let you know a couple of things. First of all, I have to say a huge thank you to our newest Patreoners, Vanessa Fulcher. Thank you, Vanessa. I love you. And Jennifer Trotter. Jennifer, you rock. Y'all rock. Thank you so much for supporting me on Patreon. It means the world to me. And then I have to say one more thing. Have y'all heard about what is going on in Italy right now? Go Google this. Go Google this because I'm not making it up. This is crazy and it's really happening. Italy has begun stripping lesbian mothers of their parental rights, like literally taking the birth certificate and taking the non-biological mother off the birth certificate. So they have no legal rights to their children should anything happen to their spouse. Like this is some crazy shit going on. And it's very scary and horrifying. You know, like if they can do it there in that country, what's to stop other countries from following suit? Here we go. What the actual? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Go Google it, look it up. There's articles. It's really happening. And so that's some scary shit. And that's why people like Peggy need to exist. And that's why this shows like this need to exist. There's still a lot of ignorance out there. Really a lot. And dumb people. No, not dumb people. Just ignorance. There's a lot of ignorance. I don't think anyone's dumb. I think some people are just ignorant. Ooh. On another note, I do have to let you know, it is that time of year again, folks. It is the podcast, the People's Choice Podcast Awards season. What does that mean? That means I need you because I can't win this award unless you vote for me. So I need y'all to go to podcastawards.com, make a little account. Don't worry, they won't spam you. I promise they don't spam. And then you're going to click the thing that says vote and you're going to vote for the Queer Family Podcast in the LGBTQIA category and also the very first category, the best podcast of them all category. We have won the LGBTQIA category twice. If you're a listener, you know this. And it would be great to win again. So go do that for me. It would mean the world. It really would. After you finish this episode, go to podcastawards.com and just vote for this little here show. One more thing that is funny about this episode is, I don't know if y'all know, but recently in New York, Canadian wildfires caused some crazy air for us New Yorkers. And while I was interviewing Peggy is the day that it really went down. And I record right in front of a window. And you'll see, like, it starts out really bright. And as the interview goes, you'll see that the room gets darker and darker. I was looking out the window while Peggy was talking, thinking, what is that? It looked like the apocalypse outside, but I couldn't say anything because I'm talking to Peggy. But anyway, it's just a fun little fact of what was happening in the interview. So if you watch the videos on YouTube, you'll see. It's really kind of funny. Anyway, little time capsule moment there. Okay, it's time to roll the tape. I won't yammer on anymore. Helen and Beulah, my beautiful assistants who don't exist, please roll that tape, ladies. I love you so much. I love you. And I love you at home. Thanks for tuning in.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Jamie.
It is a pleasure to have you here on the Queer Family Podcast. I am very excited to talk to you and hear your whole story.
Well, I'm excited to tell it.
Oh, good, good. And the folks at home don't know this, but we just started the episode and then my internet cut out. So we're starting the very beginning all over again, because that's the beauty of this COVID life we live in, where everybody's using internet to talk with each other.
That's right. And even us old folks had to learn how to do it all and keep learning.
It's a lot. It's a learning curve.
Yes.
All right. So let's just dive right in. Why don't you, Peggy Gillespie, give us the 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you are here talking the Queer Fam Squad. On your marks. Get set. Go.
Okay. So I'm Peggy Gillespie. I'm the co-director of Family Diversity Projects, a nonprofit that has created 8 different traveling photo text exhibits over the years. I'm also the mom of a 36-year-old non-binary kiddo. And I'll show a picture for those of you watching. This was Jay around 6th grade, was mostly always misgendered at the time as a boy, but was always saying to me, tell everybody that I'm a girl. Now it's me trying to remember all the time to use they, them pronouns. I'm the author of Love Makes a Family, Portraits of LGBT People and Their Families, a big coffee table book and an exhibit that still travels. That's the new book, which you're looking at, Authentic Selves, Celebrating Trans and Non-Binary People and Their Families, just came out. And the exhibit has been opening at universities and recently at the very school that my kiddo went to 30 years ago, a pre-K through 6th grade school, just showed this project on trans and non-binary people. That's what I'm most excited about. And in addition, I'll just say I'm an actress, and I right before COVID performed with the great, brilliant genius Taylor Mack in the 24-decade history of popular music. And that was, I was naked in some of it. So I'm known as Nudie Baby
when I was 70. Peggy. Okay, Peggy. All right. Showing up for us here, Peggy.
Oh, wow. Yes.
I was just talking about the lack of representation that I'm seeing in New York City in my kids' elementary school.
Wow.
Like, there's no pride celebration. We're working to get it. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I totally understand. Like, you must feel so proud. You must be so happy. Like, I think I need to bring this exhibit to my kids' school.
You do.
We're going to have to talk about this.
Absolutely, because I have to say, I went at the planning meeting with all the faculty at the school, and it was brilliant. They really infuse from age 3, that 3-year-olds know all the pronouns. They infuse the entire education in a age-appropriate way to show that, I was going to use some expletive, but Ron DeSantis, that asshole, idiot.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantis, cruel and destructive people like him and others who are tormenting and torturing our trans and non-binary kids and their families. And ruining schools for all kids. Yeah. So 2 days ago, I went to the faculty meeting where they debriefed after having the exhibit up for a month. We started with a panel of our local contributors, people that are in the book and the exhibit, which was mesmerizing and incredible. And then each teacher from preschool on up to the sixth grade told me and everybody what they had done with the exhibit and how they responded and their relationships that the littlest ones had. Oh, I have a white shirt too. And, you know, from that level to, you know, why do people, what is everybody's problem? You know, we're all created equal, remember? I mean, to really deep thinking on this issue, I was in tears. I have to say the entire faculty meeting, and the principal of the school said it was the best faculty meeting she had had in the whole year. And they said, and what, how are we going to continue this teaching so that not just the exhibit goes, what are we going to do next year? You know, where is this going to go? Because they want to infuse gender identity and awareness of that, of the diversity and inclusion through every aspect. I mean, the gym teacher did games that related to identity with, and all the exhibit was all around the gym, actually.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Children are no stranger to gender. We can start talking about gender right off the bat.
Right.
And there are many kids who probably need to have these discussions about gender. We all do.
And there were some in particular kids that are, I wouldn't use the word struggling, but trying to figure it out for themselves. Mm-hmm. And they really, really, these young ones appreciated having these discussions. And each grade at its level of understanding discussed, what does it mean to be an authentic self?
Mm.
And what does that mean to you? And what does that mean for gender? And what does that mean for the people? And pick out somebody in the exhibit, in the book, who you most relate to and share that with us while they were also playing games.
Empathy and like, wow, where's this school?
This is in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Of course it is. Well, I knew it was going to be somewhere like Amherst.
Well, let me say that 1995 Amherst, which was still a pretty progressive place, is when we created Love Makes a Family, that exhibit on LGBT families, caused the biggest and longest controversy in the history of Amherst, because originally the superintendent of schools said, no, it cannot go into the elementary schools. And I had done one on multiracial families because that's what my family was about. It was very, very popular and successful. And so I thought, oh, gay and lesbian families, that'll be great. They'll love that. But he said, no, it would make the kids think about sex. And I said, well, what about a pregnant heterosexual teacher in your classroom? Like, are you going to ban her? Or, you
know? Yeah, that's what I keep saying with all this don't say gay crap and all this shit. Like, where do we draw the line here? This is like a snowball that's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger until somebody puts a stop to this craziness.
Exactly.
It's madness.
It is.
I want everybody to know how they can get the exhibit in their schools for their children and in all the places. But before we do that, and we'll say that at the end, I want to delve into your story, your personal story, and your family building journey, if we can. Where did it all begin, Peggy?
Okay.
Take us back.
Let me just say, so that I don't forget to say that right now in the Amherst Middle School, the public school has been a huge controversy because there were two or three staff members, guidance counselors, who are extremely transphobic, evangelical Christians. Uh-huh. And there's a big national story building up, and they just put the exhibit Authentic Selves up yesterday to counter this. I mean, the assistant superintendent's probably being fired and the guidance counselors. So it's been a big thing. So my own personal story. So I was married to a man, a wonderful man who died when my kiddo was 13. And Greg and I adopted Jay when Jay was about 1 month old. Mm-hmm. Jay was and still is an amazing human being who physically was like some kind of genius, crawled the day that Jay turned 4 months, walked at 5 months, holding on. 7 months was walking, running. And then in 10 months, we had to put Jay into gymnastics because Jay was hanging upside down on everything. So I figured better learn how to do this correctly. And as a new, inexperienced mom, like, whoa. So Jay happened to be half Black, half white in terms of ancestry. In preschool, when Jay was 3, Jay's best friend, Amelia, saw Jay's new doll after Christmas and said, what an ugly skin color. It was brown. And Jay was light-skinned person. So everybody who I tell this story to thinks, whoa, the parents must be ardent racists. Well, the parents were our best friends.
Right, right.
And so I thought, oh my God, I have a lot of learning to do here. I mean, I, of course, as a white family raising a child of color in an era when the social workers, the black social workers, were against families like ours adopting because we didn't know enough about racism to prepare our kids for. I mean, it's not like a three-year-old Amelia was racist. She had just absorbed, it's the air we breathe, you know, that a black doll was not as beautiful or as good or was dirty in some way. So, so that's when I looked for a photographer who happened to be Jay's preschool teacher, Gigi Kaiser, and we made Of Many Colors portraits of multiracial families. It went to all the schools in Amherst and public. There was a big public opening. And then I'm a journalist. So I did a story, cover story for the Boston Globe magazine, Sunday magazine, and featured some of the pictures. And then people started to ask for the exhibit. At that point, we were not a nonprofit. We were nothing. We didn't even know what a nonprofit really was. So we just started sending it out in cardboard boxes and making a couple copies. We now have 8 different exhibits, one called Building Bridges. That one's about immigrants and refugees and asylum seekers that I started the day Trump was elected. And we have one on all kinds of families called In Our Family that we created right after the big controversy in Amherst, because 5 families sued the public schools to prevent it in federal court, but we won. And the exhibit was up. So we thought not too many schools are going to want to go to have all these meetings and right-wing lawyers coming in and everything. So we put together In Our Family to show the multitude range of all kinds of families in this country and put a lot of lesbian, gay parented families in it, not necessarily just representing, we're a lesbian family because there were those, but it might be the foster family or the multiracial family happens to be 2 men from New York, Doug Robinson and Michael L. Sasser, they're now grandparents. You know, started at a very early time when families were just forming AI, artificially inseminated children. Mm-hmm. The parents are surrogate children talking about that. But gay marriage was like not even a thing, you know, when we had done Love Makes a Family. So In Our Family was to make it a little easier to get these topics into schools. And sometimes teachers or people that ordered it would say, are there any normal families in this exhibit? And I say, that's actually why we made this exhibit. That very question is, how are you defining normal?
Right.
And so, you know, whether it's a family, they're all white, 2 kids, 2 parents, man and woman, but they're deaf or somebody's deaf in the family. Does that make them not normal? Or there's somebody with Down syndrome or they're people of color, you know? Anyway, so people would say, oh, yes, of course. And so then, you know, we went on to do one on mental illness, nothing to hide. We did one on disabilities that I did with a group of 10th graders, and then one on LGBT people of faith, clergy, to counter the homophobia coming from so many churches and religious organizations of all kinds. And so then finally now, coming up to authentic selves. And so that's how, you know, my own personal story started the whole journey. And that's why it was particularly moving to see authentic selves at the same school my kid had been at when I started this whole journey. And now I'm in a relationship with a wonderful person named Jill, who was a school teacher in New York and Brooklyn and for 35 years and was almost kicked out because she was a lesbian.
Oh, really?
Yep. Not by the schools, but by some parent groups that came after her at some time. But she was such a great teacher that people rallied and she didn't lose her job. But it was a scary time. And now we're seeing the resurgence of those scary times.
Right. It's coming back.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, when I met my wife, she's a teacher as well in the DOE in New York City and has been for many years. When I met her, she was not actually out at school.
Right.
This was in like 2008 when I met her. It probably would have been fine, but it wasn't something she talked about openly.
Yeah.
Right. Now she does. Now she's out. And no, like it's not an issue at all.
Yeah. But
even since 2008. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, it's and still we're also living in somewhat bubbles of progressive people. And today, actually, I heard from Jeanette Jennings. I was telling Jeanette about what happened at the Common School with the exhibit. She said, we could not get that exhibit into any school down here in Florida, because that's where they live.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, we could find some private place or you know, let Disney show it, for example.
Right.
They showed Love Makes a Family a long time ago. I went down there when they did. Why not let them take the mantle since they're in battle anyway with DeSantis?
Right.
So we'll see what happens. But Jeanette said it's horrible down there that people are fleeing the state. Mm-hmm. I mean, it actually brings tears to my eyes to talk about it, because I know the amount of suffering that LGBTQ youth are, and particularly right now, trans and non-binary and gender non-conforming youth are facing.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about, you know, you adopted your kiddo with your husband. When did this lesbian life come in?
Oh.
When did that happen?
Well, still happening.
Right.
Even when I was with Greg was an artist, actually a great artist. And he was open, you know, to me having other relationships after many years. So I had a couple with women, very open, didn't make him always happy because, but it was like one of them took us out for our anniversary. I mean, it wasn't a hidden kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was after maybe 10 years of being together. And so even before that, we used to go to Family Week in Provincetown with Jay, and because they always wanted we'd have our exhibit up, one of them, like Love Makes a Family or something. And in fact, we're bringing Authentic Selves, so a little bit of it, to Family Week in P-Town. And so obviously I got very exposed from my naive putting together Love Makes a Family and having the town fall apart. I mean, mostly people in favor of it, I'll say, but the five families that are suing and these big meetings with people. I'm not homophobic, but I'm afraid the exhibit will turn my kid gay.
Yeah, right.
Or what, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, so gradually after Greg died, some years later, I had a relationship with a woman, and then another woman, I think, and then a guy.
As you do.
And after that short one with the woman at the end, I was like, I'm done. I'm never dating again anybody. Like, this is not for me. I'm old, getting old. And I was probably later 60s. And then a friend of mine challenged me to go on one date. That was after 4 years. And I was like, ugh, all right. You know, we had that kind of relationship where we had to do, you know, truth or dare.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked on Match that day, and usually I would just go, ick, yuck, no, or something. And there was Jill. She had just joined. She had gotten divorced from a woman. And I wrote, I paid $30, which I say she still owes me.
I think it was worth it. I think it was worth it.
I think it's worth it. Yeah. I had to write her a letter. Then I didn't hear for some weeks, and she wasn't checking because she forgot she had joined. And then finally she looked at my profile and, oh, she's pretty cute. She looked like a hippie, you know, or something. I had little flowers in my hair. And we met after a month on April Fool's Day, and we've been pranking each other ever since.
So I love that.
6 years.
Love is love is love is love.
That's amazing.
Yeah. One date. One date.
That's all it takes. Hey, we are the queens of U-Hauling. Let's be real.
That's true. And it didn't take her too long to decide to move from, she had left New York City and was in Rhinebeck for 10 years and then moved to Northampton. I'm like, this is like a joke, the U-Haul thing. I said, not together. I never thought I'd ever live together with another human being. I need my own space. And I still have my house nearby that I rent out, but I'm COVID and a little bit before that started to live together in the house she bought in Northampton.
That's great.
Yeah. Other than the fact that she's a clean freak, and I'm sure she'll hear this.
Uh-oh.
You know, that sometimes, you know, it's like, oh my God, I just want to go back to my neat but slightly messy house in Belchertown. But, you know, living together has, you know, it's been a good teaching for me that it's possible to do with a nice and good person.
Oh, I love that.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name, looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Love is love.
Oh, I have a question for you.
Yeah. Yes.
I came out in like 2000, right? It was like you were gay, you were bisexual. Like those were the choices, right? Mm-hmm. When I came out as a queer person. You're a little older than me. Not much.
much.
Not much. I think it's a wonderful thing that we have all these identities now. But like, mm-hmm. how do you identify and what's your take on these identities and, you know,
right.
from a seasoned point of view?
Okay. Well, I would love to see all of this, as I always wished for all of our exhibits and family diversity to become obsolete. Like, who cares? Nobody needs to be, you know, marginalized for anything. So I'm not big on my own labels. I guess you would have to say I've lived a bisexual life in terms of having been with many men for a long time and grew up in the 60s. You know, what can I say? drugs, sex,
hey, I get
Rolling
it. I
Stones, get it. Blah, blah, blah. Janet Joplin, I think one of my first crushes, though I don't think I was of aware course. Of that.
I mean, I grew up in San Francisco in the 70s and 80s. So I know a lot of ex-hippies. I'll tell you that much.
Right, right. Well, I guess I'm not so ex if you saw they're on tie-dye still.
Yeah, you never are. You're always a hippie. Once a hippie, always a hippie.
That's true.
Right. It's all my aunties, all my parents' best friends, you know.
And I lived in the Haight and Berkeley for a bit. Was studying at American Conservatory Theater. And, I was at Smith going out there for study things. And I'll just say when I was at Smith College, which was in the 60s, if you were a lesbian, you would be thrown out. Now, which is where my kid went, then identified as female and but as a lesbian or bisexual, but basically always with women. Mm-hmm. And now it's like if you're not queer, it's unusual, supposedly. At least that's what it seems like. Everybody seems to be using they/them pronouns mm-hmm. and really being acknowledged and safe in this particular campus. But when I was there, and to be honest, so I was young, you know, 18, 19, I didn't even question, you know, I just thought, well, there are probably no lesbians here. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to be. We grew up in such a like little blinders. Mm-hmm. In New York City and in Tenafly, New Jersey is where I was living when I was growing up. And, you know, I didn't even question it. Of course, I later found out that like a lot of my friends at Smith were lesbians having secret relationships.
Of course, that and girls.
Right. But then I wound up having a couple group experiences. Again, 60s, little, you know, drugs helped mm-hmm. along the way. And mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I was with a woman and a man, and actually two women and a man. I don't know if this is what you want.
This is amazing, Peggy. I love this. This is amazing. I keep going, please.
All right. So I remember like thinking, like I had been attracted to the guy, and it was one of my best friends had met them or something. It was at NYU, and he was a professor or something. This was his girlfriend. Well, she was beautiful. And I had never thought about being with a woman. And by the end of that night, I was like, whoa, I was wrong about all this. Like, I'm much more attracted to her than him. And it was like, really, I mean, I can still remember that feeling of the softness, you know, of a woman's body, and just not having known, like never having done anything but hug my friends or something and never thought about it. So that kind of like opened this closed mind. So I didn't really come out as anything. And now, you know, I just would say I'm a person who seems to fall in love with people for who they are, not necessarily the gender, although I can't imagine being with a man again. Not, I don't, you know, it's just like, it's just not in my mind to that ever happening, but it wouldn't be like Matt Damon suddenly was interested in me. I mean, I'm just making that up, but
sure.
Or you know, different kind of people that, I mean, it's not like impossible, but again, at this age, it's about people, about connection, about community. My best friends, I have such a great group of friends. Most of them are straight, but many of them have had one of my best male friends. He still flirts constantly and had relationships with men, and he's been married like 45 years to one of my best friends. But he spends the summer out near Provincetown. They have a house, and he's always in the gay bar, in the bars, flirting with guys, being open about, like, I have this, you know, wonderful wife. So my friends are not, we'll say, closed-minded. They had a lot of questions about trans and non-binary people. They all hate they, them, and they, you know, it's not grammatical. So
this is my mother's biggest issue. And my mother is the biggest fan of this here podcast. She listens to every episode, and, you know, she's on board with all this, you know, I'm educated all the time, but this is my mother's big thing. She has a really hard time with they, them, because it's bad grammar. And she can't figure out how to get behind it. She keeps trying and she slips and she messes up. And so, like, what do you have to say to that as a mother of a gender non-conforming kiddo?
Yeah.
And you did say you're slipping up here and there. So what are your thoughts on that? What has your experience been being someone who really is immersed in queer culture and is queer yourself?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, what's your experience here?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question because, again, I get asked it all the time. And I also volunteer teach at an assisted living, a group of 80 to 96-year-olds, writing group, creative writing group. And, I mean, they're all very open-minded, left-wing kind of people in this group. We've been going for years. But when I started to do this project, the questions, and they often do, you know, they're all writers, so the grammar makes a difference to them. And, you know, I can explain the thing. Well, if somebody passes you in the car and you don't know their gender, you say, oh, they passed me, or, you know, or something. So it's not really that. But on the other hand, they'll say, well, but you say they is, you know, going to the theater, or they are going to the theater, but it's just one person, blah, blah, blah. So I mean, I personally hope that the trans non-binary people find a better solution, perhaps. I mean, that's what everybody says to me. Why not Z, or things that people could, like Ms., as we got into when I was getting older. But on the other hand, my belief is that people should use what they want to use. I think people deserve to make their own choices. And yes, with my own kiddo, it's only been a couple of years that Jay has chosen to use they, them. And I forget a huge amount of time. I'm able to correct friends, but it's just so natural for me to say she or my daughter. Right. One point I was allowed to say my daughter they, but then for the book, actually, the editor said, you want to ask Jay, when I dedicated it to my daughter, if it's okay to say my daughter. And Jay said, yeah, I'd rather be grown kid or kiddo or something, or offspring, because it's going to be there forever, if presuming the book stays in, you know, print. And I castigate myself because I feel like I've been practicing and trying. But I also think some of the people I interviewed, the younger ones, said, you know, I give my mom and my dad credit. It's not like they're misgendering me on purpose. You know, it's not cruel or anything. Just, you know, it's a habit, and I'm not going to get angry at them, but I do remind them. And and all we're supposed to do is then say, I'm sorry, they. So I encourage people to stretch, as we've stretched for many other changes in our lifetime around race and identities connected to race, that we can learn.
Yeah.
They, them. It's not that big a deal.
We can. And it's all in an attempt to break the mold of quote unquote normal. Right?
Exactly.
Let's get rid of that.
Right.
Because there is no normal.
There is none.
You know, open our minds and accept and listen to what people tell us and give people what they're asking for. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I mean, when my kid was growing up, who was then identifying as girl, very strongly, never said, tell them I'm a boy. It was always, tell them I'm a girl. Jay would, you know, cut their hair, like shave it. Here's another picture for those who are
watching.
Yeah.
That's why you got to watch.
Right. Everybody thought Jay was a boy. So, and Jay wanted to wear boys' clothing from age about what traditionally what considered boys' clothing, baseball cap backwards, never girls' bathing suit, none of that stuff, mm-hmm. and no dresses. And the school was a little concerned then that Jay not wear this hat. I said, why not? It makes Jay feel comfortable and good. And then they brought in the school psychologist who said, well, I think you ought to get Jay, like going to, let's say, a wedding or something. I think you ought to, at certain occasions, tell Jay to wear a dress. I was like, why would I do that? Jay does not feel good in a dress, would not want a dress. When Jay was 4, 3, 2, I could dress. I have all these great pictures of Jay in little velour and tie-dye outfits that I picked and I thought were adorable. But a child should wear what they feel comfortable in. And so I never, ever, ever made Jay put on dress. And at Jay's senior prom, for some reason, I still never figured out, decided to make with one of their friends, a teacher, a beautiful gown. And Jay was looked like Mariah Carey then. Like, in this velvet. I mean, it was unbelievable. I said, why are you doing that? I just want to shock everybody at the prom. And I mean, it's true, you know, those of us, I mean, I'm not like, I was sort of a tomboy, but you know, there was something really, I mean, Jay was adorable in those outfits and gorgeous in that prom thing that'll, you know, oh, you know, I wish Jay would show that feminine side too, that beauty, but that's all stereotypes. That's all, you know, so, I mean, it's just constant education, re-education. And once when Jay was on a soccer team, this would probably have been grade 7 or so, maybe 6. Jay was a fabulous goalie. Told you Jay was a great athlete. And the other team coach, who was a woman with short hair, came over to the team and said, I want to see the ID of this child here because I don't believe this is a girl. This, you know, Jay does not play like a girl. I mean, and made Jay, you know, I mean, I was like, I'm Jay's mother. Jay is a girl. I can tell you that. It was a very, for a less strong kid, this would have been a humiliating experience because this was in front of all the other kids. And I think she made them all line up. And I don't know, there was like this whole thing. So I went up to her, the coach, after, you know, I mean, I was sort of like, I couldn't intervene and I probably should have, but I didn't know what to do. And then I went over and said, you know, I don't think you ought to be coaching a girl's team because, and I was very nice. I wasn't screaming or yelling. I'm not like that. I said, you shouldn't be coaching a girl's team if you believe that girls only play a certain way, that Jay is not playing like a girl. That's such a stereotype. And I said, and I assume you thought Jay was a boy because of Jay's haircut. I said, you have almost the same haircut.
Right.
So just, you could have humiliated my child. This was a terrible thing to do. And I hope you've learned something from it. Jay was okay with it, but these things kept happening. Like Jay went to a camp. I prepared them. I told them it was a very progressive camp. In fact, the leader of it was kind of non-binary themselves. And, but they forgot to tell one intern. So for day one, Jay's lined up on the girl's side of the bathroom and she comes up and says, you're in the wrong bathroom line. You need to come over here. And Jay was too embarrassed. And so just didn't pee and came home like wiggling and wouldn't go back to camp. Went back one day and they had a whole discussion about gender and stuff. And they did the best they could at the time. But Jay was just too, you know, like, I don't want to be there.
Right. And then it felt like we were getting somewhere. Things were changing. It was going to get better for kids like this, for kids who are questioning. And then here we are. It feels like it's going even to a worser degree.
Yep. Jay just sent me, actually, last night, Human Rights Campaign came out with a statement saying that this country is dangerous for LGBTQ people.
A travel advisory.
Right, yes. And Jay being down in D.C. is quite aware of the dangers also as a perceived Black person.
Mm.
And I mean, not just perceived as a multiracial person, but right. often perceived as a Black male.
That's a whole nother layer, Peggy.
Right.
That's a whole nother layer.
Yep.
And that's why it's important what you're doing and what you've been doing. I mean, it seems like anytime you were faced with any kind of adversity or any otherness, let's say, you created something out of it that like educated the masses. And so you're just such a change maker and it's amazing. And we need more folks like you in the world who maybe sleep around a lot. And I'm just kidding.
And go naked on age 70 on stages, major stages.
Naked. But can you tell, first of all, where can they find Authentic Selves? I have a copy. It's a really beautiful book. Everybody should get it. And then how can people go about possibly getting the exhibit?
Authentic Selves, maybe you want to hold it up again so that people can see this great cover, because I love it. All the four of the families in it. It's available at any bookstore. You know, of course, I'm in favor of independent bookstores, getting your local bookstores to order it. Of course, you can get it through Amazon. If you get it through your own bookstore and you can put a great review on Amazon, that always helps. Right now, we have about 6 5-star reviews. So getting 1,000 of those would be great.
Go in there, everybody, and put a review in.
And I would love for people to get an extra copy or many if they have the money to send copies to their, whether libraries or schools or legislators anywhere in the country, send one to their house of worship, bring it, you know, like there's a lot you can do with it. If you can afford to get a bunch of them, send it to the, let's say the Florida legislature, you know, a bunch of them.
Authentic Selves. And then the next part is celebrating trans and non-binary people and their families. I don't know if you said that, but
yeah,
it's all picture form. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're great pictures that photographers from all over the country and incredible individuals.
And hopefully I will be interviewing a couple of the folks in your book as well. I'm actually in talks with some of them. So I'm very excited for that.
Great. They're wonderful. And the exhibit, it opened, it premiered at Purdue University. I mean, no, it's Penn State, but it's going to Purdue out in Indiana. Some at Los Angeles site, the San Francisco Public Library, the James Hormel Center is going to bring it, getting bookings from PFLAG groups all over the country, and tours can be arranged. So we had to make 4 copies, or making the 4th copy of the exhibit. They have about 20 photos. We're desperately, I might as well say this, we desperately could use some funding as a nonprofit. It's tax deductible. We've been looking forever for that endowment person who's going to say, you know, this work, especially after seeing what happened in the school the other day, somebody ought to endow this work, because we never turn any venue down based on finances. So your small little house of worship in Ohio and you want the exhibit and you have no money, we'll even pay for the shipping. We ask people to pay, you know, shipping is about $300 round trip. We ask them to pay that if they can, and then to give us a donation. Some places, Mayo Clinic once gave us $5,000, you know, big universities, $2,000, small school, $100. You know, so we rely on those as well as trying to find grants and donors. And we do an annual fund, but they can go to our website, which is easy to remember. It's Family Diversity Projects with an S. Doesn't matter the capitals or not. FamilyDiversityProjects.org.
FamilyDiversityProjects.org.
Or they can email me at FamilyDiversityProjects@gmail.com.
And that will go in the show notes so people can find it, so that it's go look there. And if like somebody like me who wants to get it in their child's school, what do? We just reach out to you and tell you we want it in our school?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens.
And then we have to make sure it's okay with the school.
Well, yes. I mean, what you probably would do like is go to the principal or the head school. And sometimes it's teachers who ask, sometimes it's parents, sometimes it's the principal. Like recently, we had another school ask the principal because they had heard about it from the newspaper. Or you have a house of worship that you worship at, or a workplace. You just, you know, have to get somebody, whoever is the proving person or group, to say, yes, we want to do it. Then they always ask me about the money. And I say, you know what? We're not turning you down. So you can book it, even if you don't know where or if there will be any donations. So that's an unusual thing about our nonprofit. We've survived for over 30 years, God knows how. And whoever wants to do it, then contacts me, we fit it into the schedule. And boy, again, if we could get some more funding, we're going to probably need more copies of this exhibit. It's very easy to set up on our website. If they go to familydiversityprojects.org, they'll see a slideshow of all different venues, all different ways people hang the exhibit, put it on tabletops, put it on every, you know, people have been very inventive. It's not hard. They're all framed. They have plexiglass so they don't break. The text is laminated thickly like a double credit card so it hangs straight. There's wires on the back. If I could set it up, and I have, anyone on this earth could do it. It's so very easy.
So everybody has to go figure out how we're going to get the exhibit everywhere, how we're going to educate everyone, and you know, go buy that book.
That's right.
And yeah, it's been really such a pleasure to talk to you and to get to know you. I appreciate it so much that you came and graced us with your presence. And this is not the end. So keep in touch.
I definitely will.
Thank you, Peggy.
Love is love.
Ah, well, folks, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to listen to another one right now. We have so many episodes to choose from, so just pick one and go, or pick the one that pops up on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Go for it. So much beautiful goodness out there. Listen, this might be your call to action. If you've been thinking about, oh, God, she hasn't told my story. I want to tell my queer family story, or I think this story would really resonate with the audience, but you haven't gotten the courage to do it. This is your call to do so. You're just going to email me at thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com, and you're going to tell me a little bit about your story, and maybe you'll come on the show. I want to hear all the stories. I want to hear from everyone, because you know what? Our families are freaking beautiful, and that's what I'm going to leave you with. Our families are freaking beautiful. So thank you so much for tuning in. Continue to do so. Share it far and wide, and I'll see you next time. Thanks so much.